Today's volume of trading, 10,503,000 shares. Industrials are up 10.81 to 851.40. Rails, 188.74, up 1.45.
That was part of it. Battery-powered toothbrushes and more trips to Europe than ever before. Office boys investing in utilities and Chilean nitrate. You could pick up the Wall Street Journal in the barbershop.
We are in the midst of the greatest upward surge of economic well-being in the history of any nation. Our flourishing progress...
More people ate more and more lavishly, took more baths, and bought more new cars than ever in human history. There was a waiting list for Cadillacs. At the Arthur Discotheque in New York, Scotch whiskey went for $1.70 an ounce. They plan to open a bunny club on the island of Guam.
Ford, 51.5. AT&T closed at 66.25. Eastern Airlines, 52.125. RCA, 33.25.
The music was confident, loud, and assertive, and disquieting somehow, as though specially written to keep time with all our ills.
God damn it, I hate to put bombs and nape in on these people, and on these women and children. I just didn't do it. I just said...
This man is an American colonel in Vietnam. He was wounded in the leg when the Viet Cong fired on his helicopter. The leg will have to be amputated. They haven't told him yet, but he guesses.
I got a lot of pain in that left ankle. That's a good sign. It's that sharp pain that you get when you got nerves, you know. It's that sharp nerve pain. Burning.
They're going to do all they can to save that leg.
I know.
Conscience objection should not be just limited to religious grounds. Political ground should be included. As you know, the Nuremberg laws, which the United States ratified...
Two men, strangers to each other, and separated by thousands of miles.
...for his conduct, and that neither fear, nor ignorance, nor orders, were any excuse
two men,
for crimes against
each
humanity...
Each striving to do what he thinks is right. Each grappling to find his way in a world where the old truths were being challenged, and the new truths were not yet known.
Is our world gone? We say farewell. Is a new world coming?
Parents' permission. I personally am for any college health service giving out pills if the girls are 21, even if they did.
This girl is a college student. She is talking about birth control pills. She is neither afraid of the subject nor embarrassed. It was a part of the change. It was a year of many changes.
Today, the world is facing a population crisis, in my judgment, greater in scope, more serious in effect than anything Malthus dreamed possible. One half of the world's population and two-thirds of the world's children do not have enough to eat today.
By the late 1970s, our requirements for fresh water will overtake our supply.
Maybe the bitter irony of the century that as the doctors prolong our productive lives, the same science of which they're part cuts down the time at which a person is permitted to enjoy.
Only birth control on a massive scale, coupled with rapidly increased food production in the developing countries, can prevent the greatest worldwide catastrophe of modern times.
The change was fast and insistent. It was a year when protest became not only fashionable, but almost a full-time profession. It was the young, mainly. Both sexes dressed alike, chinos and sweaters, long hair on the boys and frequently beards. Sometimes the beard helped in telling boys from girls. They played guitars and walked in protest marches and listened to Bach on hi-fi and sometimes to Bob Dylan. And they had a name, the New Left.
I don't always agree with what people call the New Left, but the main issue here is not what I believe, you know, outside of the Vietnam movement. There are people, all kinds of people involved in the Vietnam movement, some of whom were very militantly...
He was not alone in his thinking. It became a kind of debate. Which side are you on? Do you support the war in Vietnam or oppose it? And it was almost like asking how old you are.
Stand or fall because of the people in the peace movement. Nobody manipulates it.
It's a bunch of nonsense. And that I would, you know, a lot of these students are college students, and right now they're acting like a bunch of immature kids. Everybody have an obligation. I mean, one man shouldn't have to come over here.
Always follow our conscience. We should think much more in terms of one world. rather than of one's country. Laws that are just laws, that are laws that are for the common good.
I would say my first reaction was one of utter revulsion to the protests against the stand that our government has taken. I feel that we have to stand behind our president when the decision is made, and this is a point.
I submit that if you really want to achieve in Asia what the spokesman for our government says they want to achieve, you must be ready to go to war with China, with all that implies.
The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring and bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, I you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
The eve of destruction. This and another song, Where Have All the Flowers Gone, were among a rash of 1965 popular songs protesting the Vietnam War. Songs written by folk singers like Dylan and Joan Baez, who in an earlier year had produced lyrics of protest on civil rights. The songs were musical manifestations of a loud and widespread dissent that clearly had its beginnings in those civil rights movements. It was loudest and most active on the college campuses, and it was echoed throughout the ranks of the nation's intelligentsia. Some ardent protesters publicly burned their draft cards, and two conscientious objectors burned themselves to death, one near the Pentagon, the other outside United Nations headquarters. But with all the noise and fury and sometimes horror of the Vietnam dissent, President Johnson clung to a substantial nationwide consensus of support, although everywhere there were doubts.
My friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Not long ago, most Americans didn't know where Vietnam was or care. In 1965, they did know and did care. Since it was French for 100 years, Saigon has some of the sound and feel and atmosphere of Paris, or would if there hadn't been a war on. But the American Marines there didn't think they were in Paris. Instead, they were in the reality of heat and bombing runs and nights in those little villages where they could hear the Viet Cong only a few yards away.
Hey, Cap, we got a target for some fam.
We have entered most of our wars with solemnity and high purpose. It didn't happen that way in Vietnam. The war didn't start, it evolved, or to use the current word, escalated. When the French pulled out, we sent some military people to Saigon. The purpose was to give advice and moral support to the South Vietnamese government, which was fighting the encroachments of the communists to the north. In 1960, a total of 785 military advisors were in the country. Sometimes they got close enough to the actual fighting to see it. The day came when they were shot at. By 1961, there were 2,000 American soldiers in the country. The name had changed from military advisors to combat support units. In 1962, there were 11,000. 1963, it was 16,500. By August 1965, there were 90,000 American soldiers in Vietnam, and more than twice that number by year's end. They weren't there primarily to advise or support anybody. They were fighting a war. The escalation in 1965 began in February, when the Viet Cong blew up a United States Army barracks, killing 22 GLOM military targets in North Vietnam. Except for one brief hiatus, the bombing attacks continued through the year to Christmas Eve. At the same time, American combat units began arriving by the thousands. And by year's end, more than 1,500 American soldiers had been killed in the fighting, 1,300 of them in 1965 alone.
Roger, rounds complete.
Right.
Bob Hope, who'd been in almost as many campaigns as Stonewall Jackson, dropped in to make it official.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thrilled to be here in Sacramento. Thank you very much. Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, here we are in Saigon. That's Vietnamese for I must be nuts. You all know Saigon? That's a booby trap of the mayor. Please, we don't want too much applause. I'd hate to be held over here. No, I just want to say that here I am, the longest delivery that Chicken Delight ever made. I forgot to burn my draft card, and here I am. And you men have a very important mission, to make the world safe for our pickets. I want to tell you, I had to come back, though. My malaria was homesick. I'm happy to be here. I understand everything's great. The situation's improved. In fact, things couldn't be better. Well, who am I going to believe, you or Huntley and Brinkley?
Well, Mr. Hope was of a generation that could point out Attu on the map and Guam and remember jokes about Lucky Strike Green. The new protesters didn't, and they were not amused by Bob Hope or anyone else.
Actually, there's 14 different ways to beat the draft as such. One was, number one was be a CO, number two, have a demonstration, number three, refuse to sign the loyalty oath, number four was play at being a homosexual, number five, you can get a note from a friendly family doctor, you know, if you can afford to buy one or if you happen to have one handy, getting a note from him.
As chaplain here, I have seen many men go down. I've conducted memorial services for them. Many times a question comes, is this vain or is this a waste? Relatives often write and wonder if this isn't a ridiculous war we're in.
Long time passing.
And at home, the stocks went up and people got married or went on vacation or on strike, but it wasn't quite the same. Many of the old familiar things were suddenly becoming quaint and not to be taken seriously anymore. Can you remember at least two movies in which the Andrews sisters sang on the deck of an aircraft carrier? Well, the word for that was camp. The word is hard to define, but basically it was anything so ridiculous it was amusing. Tiffany lampshades, Ruby Keeler musicals, old copies of Batman comics, player piano rolls.
Suddenly that year, familiar things, sometimes familiar voices, were challenged. Princess Margaret came for a visit and made a statement prepared by whoever prepares such things for the use of royalty. The new ones couldn't have cared less.
We look forward with great pleasure to meeting the President and Mrs. Johnson again, and to spending as much time as possible as we can seeing the art treasures and historic buildings that up to now we have only been able to read about.
Brigitte Bardot came, too. Like Princess Margaret, she was followed around by newsmen and she wore some dramatic clothes, but in all honesty, the whole scene was absurd.
Today, when I saw Gemini arriving in the sea, I was so full of emotion, you know, and if I have a wish to do, I'd like to meet them.
Miss Bardot did not meet the astronauts. She met a lot of reporters and press agents and Hollywood people, but most others are busy. There was a crusade, or roundup, for a better world. And the call to colors, when it came in rolling Texas style.
Our basic task is threefold. First, to keep our economy growing. To open for all Americans the opportunity that is now enjoyed by most Americans, and to improve the quality of life for all.
Lyndon Baines Johnson and the Great Society. 2 weeks before he took the oath of office for the first term as president in his own right, Mr. Johnson spelled out to Congress what he wanted for the Great Society.
Major recommendations in the three main.
The 89th Congress, with top-heavy Democratic majorities in both the House and Senate, almost immediately went to work. They were in session till 12:50 in the morning of October 23rd. In that time, they enacted and sent to President Johnson 85% of the Democratic Party's platform promises. On March 3rd, they authorized $1.1 billion to fight poverty in the Appalachians. On April 11th, they provided federal assistance for elementary and secondary schools. On June 21st, they reduced excise taxes by $4.6 billion. And 9 days later, they passed the controversial Medicare plan. On August 6th, they passed a bill ensuring Negroes the right to register and vote. And so it went. When it was all over, a record of 225 public laws had been enacted in 9 months, 18 days, and nearly 13 hours. Senate Republican leader Everett M. Dirksen made a rather plaintive comment on the session. It was an echo, he said, not a choice.
I propose that we launch a national effort to make the American city a better and a more stimulating place to live.
There is a section of Los Angeles called Watts. It is almost entirely Negro. It is a slum, but not in the eastern sense of tall, decayed buildings and narrow, littered streets. The streets in Watts are fairly broad and occasionally even lined with trees, but it's a dreary place. Checks cashed at a discount, cheap wine for sale, garbage piled up in front of stores. It's ugly. And for those who lived there in 1965, there was nowhere else to go.
Just before dark on Wednesday, August 11th, a minor incident, an apparently routine traffic arrest, turned the steaming, throbbing ghetto of Watts into a no-man's land, or rather, a no-white man's land. A rumor spread that a policeman had beaten up an old Negro woman in a dispute that followed the arrest. That was the start of 4 days and nights of rioting, looting, burning, and shooting. Rampaging mobs of Negroes running wild through a 50-square-mile area, screaming their defiance at outnumbered squads of police. By Friday, Police Chief William Parker asked help from the National Guard. They arrived and set up a command post in a high school.
After seeing some of my men an attempt to murder them with an automobile, and one man came very close to being killed, my order went out, my weapons are loaded. And they have been loaded ever since. And some people have been hurt because my weapons are loaded. And this was perfectly right, and it had to be. It was forced on us.
It was mainly over by Sunday night, and the result could be counted. 35 people killed, 926 seriously wounded, 4,289 arrested, 744 buildings damaged or destroyed by fire, 457 picked bare by looters. But if the violence ended, the anger did not.
I'm opposed to wrong in any shape, form, or fashion. I am opposed to lawlessness. I'm opposed to violence. I'm opposed to burning anything up. You don't go and burn down a house to get some rats out of it.
The anger lingered. But it was almost as if this were the climax, the end gesture in a series of gestures. We had heard these voices before in other years. Now there seemed to be a softening. The words were the same. In victory, they walked from Selma to Montgomery. It is easier to hate when you lose than when you win. And at the Alabama State Capitol in Montgomery, the new mood showed.
They told us we wouldn't get here. There were those who said that we would get here only over that dead body.
Well, talk.
Yes. All the world today knows that we are here and we are standing before the forces of power in the state of Alabama saying we ain't gonna let nobody turn us around.
I do not believe that the Great Society is the ordered, changeless, and sterile battalion of the ants. It is the excitement of becoming, always becoming, trying, probing, falling, resting, and trying again, but always trying and always gaining.
In the autumn of 1965, the first Roman Catholic Ecumenical Council in nearly a century came to an end. It was the last of four sessions that had extended across 4 years. The last session was by far the most productive. Basically, there were 11 documents on the agenda. Religious liberty, which included a section condemning anti-Semitism. A declaration on the church in the modern world. A sweeping document which ranged from family life to the morality of modern warfare. And agreements on divine revelations, the lay apostate. And on it went in sessions that were orderly and restrained, but occasionally became heated with debate and spiced with dissension. Out of the welter of words, of agreements, and debate, one fact emerged clearly. The Roman Catholic Church had moved, ponderously, perhaps as befits its size, to an adjustment with the modern world.
There was some other information to be remembered and filed away. Nikita Khrushchev was paid a pension of $330 a month. A lot of people in a lot of places who didn't like Americans threw bricks through the windows of the USIA libraries. General Motors announced a profit for the previous year of $1,735,000,000. And on April 27th, Edward R. Murrow died of cancer in Pawling, New York. A few days later, Linda Darnell died heroically in a house on fire. She was 43. There was Malcolm X in King Farouk, Quentin Reynolds, Jeanette MacDonald, Albert Schweitzer, Judy Holliday, Nat King Cole, and on July 14th in London, Adlai Stevenson. It's still too early to assess his impact on our times, but he surely was destined never to win completely and never completely to lose. And it is part of the Stevenson paradox that though he spoke often of peace, we remember him most vividly in a time of anger.
All right, sir. Let me ask you one simple question. Do you, Ambassador Zorin, deny that the USSR has placed and is placing medium and intermediate range missiles and sites in Cuba? Yes or no? Don't wait for the translation. Yes or no?
I should like to say,
sir.
Sir, will you please continue your statement? You will have your answer in due course.
I'm prepared to wait for my answer until hell freezes over, if that's your decision.
And while the year was still new, Sir Winston Churchill. They say that he had planned his funeral, or part of it at least. If so, he did it well. Those competent to say pointed out that not since the Duke of Marlborough had an Englishman been laid to rest with such splendor. It is not diminishing to say that Sir Winston would have approved, understood, and enjoyed every moment of it.
And now it is upon us, led by the bearer party of the guards, flanked by its escort of the Royal Air Force, the gun carriage bearing the coffin, draped with the Union Jack, on it the gold and enamel of the insignia of the Garter. And as it breasts the slight rise, the naval crew that draws it presents an overwhelming impression of strength and solidarity. 92 broad sailors on the lead ropes, 42 steadying at the rear. And this moving mass of men, eight abreast, at their short, measured pace, the square of their formation seems to say, it's all right, we've got him, he is safe. Never in that long and adventurous life was he in steadier hands.
The climax was at St. Paul's Cathedral. Here, before the kings and queens and presidents and prime ministers of the world, came his final gesture. There was a song played that was not English at all. It was American, like his mother. And for a moment, their history and our history were the same.